And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's Midday with the Mayor. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott will join me, plus Jared Damaris, the state administrator of the Maryland Board of Elections, explains how reporting in the campaign finance system has been upgraded. And Jaywin Russick will review Seven Guitars, an August Wilson play at the Spotlighters Theater. Now, a conversation about Dry January. More than half of people who drink alcohol regularly said that they intended to stop drinking for at least this month. When that happens, what happens to our bodies, and what effect does an alcohol-free month have on our mental health? Joining me now are two physicians who can help us walk through those kinds of questions. Dr. Sarah Andrews is a former assistant professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. She's now the medical director at Telligen, a healthcare management company, and she joins us on Zoom. Dr. Andrews, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Niyarika Khanna is a professor of family and community medicine at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. She joins us on Zoom as well. Dr. Khanna, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. So listeners, have you been observing Dry January? Let us know how it's going. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. So Dr. Andrews, let me begin by asking, what's a healthcare management company? You work for one. What do they do?
Yeah, so we work with the federal, state Medicaid solutions as well, and we just provide different support along those lines. And so my role as a medical director, I provide oversight and with clinical expertise as well.
Well, what's your take on the benefits to folks doing Dry January, Dr. Andrews? What do you think? Good idea?
So it definitely depends on the person, and everyone's very different of what they want to do in terms of Dry January, or they do a dry-ish January. So it all kind of depends, but there's definitely both physical as well as mental health benefits of reducing alcohol, whether it's just a reduction or fully not drinking for the entire month.
And Dr. Khanna, when you talk to your patients, do you recommend something like Dry January or Sober October or whatever, you know, pick a month, any month, and come up with a resolution? What are your conversations with your patients like?
So I'm a family physician, and so as a result, I see patients of all different ages, and we are likely to see that drinking is, let's say, more common in about half of our population. So not everybody is drinking. I have lots and lots of patients who will tell you, I just have a glass of wine on New Year's Day or the day prior. So in thinking through what sort of advice to give, you also want to consider that all these people who do have a drink, perhaps socially or otherwise, are already setting these New Year's challenges for themselves. They're already thinking, well, I'm going to drink in December because I'm meeting all my friends and family and gatherings. And in January, I'm not going to drink at all, which comes up to the question of, should this be based on willpower or should this be based on a physician's advice, or what should it be? And in general, my advice to patients has always been to avoid alcohol as much as possible. And in the past, we were using American Cancer Society guidance, which was, you know, which was 7 to 14 drinks for women and men, respectively. And now I think there's going to be some sort of change. We are anticipating that maybe the levels are going to be lower. So in general, the advice from a family physician to patients is to drink less. The question of January being that one month when they completely get off alcohol is relevant to those who do drink more than once a month, but possibly less relevant for those who don't.
And Dr. Andrews, when you drink alcohol, even if you're drinking it moderately, you know, as Dr. Khanna mentioned, the current recommendation is basically one drink per day for women, no more than two drinks per day for most men. What actually happens physiologically? What organs are affected What is the impact to those organs by the introduction of alcohol into the system?
So it definitely impacts lots of different organs, not only the heart, liver, but also the mind too. So in terms of liver, it definitely can increase the risk of liver diseases, and for the heart, increasing the risk of cardiovascular disease. For the mind, I look at it as increases the risk of anxiety and depression, and it also negatively impacts sleep. Alcohol does.
So sleep, which of course is a very important parameter of health, there's a lot of information to suggest that if you're not sleeping correctly, you're more susceptible to cancer even, and to, you know, very serious disease. So Dr. Khanna, if you are drinking regularly and you stop for a month and maybe even more, I wonder, is the effect on your body similar to, for example, people who quit smoking? We heard, you know, years ago that when you quit smoking, the damage to your lungs can be reversed. Your lungs can heal themselves. They can get back to status pro ante and be okay, even if you'd been smoking for a while. So the sooner you quit, the better. Does it work the same way with alcohol? I mean, if you stop quitting, or if you quit pretty abruptly, does your liver get better? Does your mental health get better? How does that work?
Yes. Well, that's a lovely analogy. And you may know I run the Maryland Tobacco Control Center for the state. And in both these conditions, there's a set of feelings which you could translate into cravings. You know, there is a sense of craving. So depending on how much you drink, you would be entitled to that. So I'm not going to speak about problem drinking. I'm just going to address the moderate to a very occasional drinker. I think in these populations, one of the things that I think Dr. Andrews alluded to, the sleep issue. The other thing to think about is that if you're drinking enough, you're also waking up with hangovers, which interferes with your energy levels during the day. And those clearly will change if you go into a dry month. You'd also see maybe some change in your mental clarity. I mean, just those hangovers just impact your entire day. Plus, we think your skin maybe will start to look a little bit improved towards the end of the month. You might start to see your blood pressure is a little bit more reasonable. Usually the first thing you start to see in people who drink regularly and maybe a lot is that your blood pressure starts to rise. And when you stop, your blood pressure will start to see a decline in about 3 or 4 weeks. And then to get into the question of the calories that you're imbibing with these alcoholic drinks, and a lot of these alcoholic drinks come with a lot of sugar in it, which also makes you eat more. And that itself is going to be gone during the month of January. And I guess the more important thing to think about is what's going to kill you. So blood pressure, heart disease, liver disease. Liver is definitely an area which I think we all need to think about. Your alcohol is processed through the liver, and you start to see these enzymes go up as you start to become a more regular drinker. And when you go into a dry month, towards the end of the month, you will start to see some reversal of those liver enzymes. You might also start to see some change in your cravings. And to speak to cravings with that tobacco analogy, in tobacco, they're inventing more ways of giving you nicotine. But in alcohol, what they're looking at is all these non-alcoholic drinks. You know, there's these new non-alcoholic beers and wines, and I don't think they have a decent liquor, non-alcohol yet, but they've certainly got the mocktails and whatnot's going on. So in a sense, what the industry is trying to say is don't stop drinking something, you know, for this month, keep drinking. But then when February rolls around, let's try to reverse this pattern and go back. So is it a question of willpower is one of the ways to think about it. Is this your body resetting? And now when you become a little bit more mindful of what you're putting in your body, in February, are you likely to be thinking, okay, should I have this drink or should I not have this drink, versus going home and opening the fridge and going for the next, you know, nicely packaged can of mocktails these days, or a can of whatever cocktail is fashionable in that time, or a beer.
Yeah, Dr. Niyarika Khanna is a professor of family and community medicine at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. Dr. Sarah Andrews is the medical director at Telligen. That's a healthcare management company. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have more on Dry January. If you are practicing that, let me know. If you did Sober October, or if you quit altogether, has that been hard? Has that been easier than you thought? Are you feeling differently? We'd love to hear your response, your reaction to your new consideration if you've made some of your alcohol consumption. 410-662-8780. That's our number here at Midday, and our email is midday@wipr.org. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you just joined us, we're talking about what happens when people who drink alcohol give it up. And we're going to get back to that conversation in just a second. But before we do, I do want to mention a comment that was sent in via email by our friend Klaus Philipson, who is the president of Archplan. He's an urban planner and an architect. He said that he had been in touch with our guest in the first part of the program, Bruce Gartner, since last spring, requesting that design professionals enter into a discussion about how the new bridge can have a few design features that set it apart from just a basic plain vanilla bridge, through touches that may not even add cost, things like paint colors and lighting and landscaping and markers. And they suggested that there should be a pedestrian viewing platform and ideally a bike ped across the bridge, potentially by making the planned shoulders or lanes less generous. And the delays and cost increase have wiped out those discussions. So there are folks in the design community that certainly want to weigh in. I think it looks like a little bit more heavily than they've been able to weigh in. So we will continue to cover the Francis Scott Key Bridge rebuild, as well as the Bay Bridge. As I mentioned to Mr. Gartner, we'll have him back at some point and talk about the options there. But again, if you've just joined us today, we're talking about Dry January. Are you one of the millions of folks who are observing a non-alcoholic month of January? And if so, let us know how it's going. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. My guests are Dr. Sarah Andrews. She's the medical director at Telligen. That's a healthcare management company. And Dr. Niyarika Khanna, a professor of family and community medicine at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. So Dr. Andrews, before the break, Dr. Khanna brought up the business about sugar. Alcohol does contain, lots of alcohol contains sugar. And I've heard from folks who've done Dry January, and I've actually had this experience myself when I do it, and I'm in the middle of it this month, where because I'm not having that glass of wine or a martini, I have a craving for sugar. So I find that, you know, all of a sudden I'm eating desserts that I didn't used to eat. Is that typical? Is that normal? How should people approach that challenge of sugar intake if they're not taking it in through alcohol?
Yeah, so definitely everyone can be a bit different. They might have the sugar cravings like you discussed, or people just notice that because alcohol is so calorically dense, cutting back does cause weight loss even during that month. So some people will describe losing a couple pounds, and then they might, like you described too, have different, wanting different types of foods rather than the alcohol. So it really depends on the person, and it's about recognizing your own patterns and seeing how you can adjust your daily habits based on the own patterns that you notice about yourself.
Let's go to the phones. Charles is on the line in Baltimore. Welcome to the show with Dr. Niyarika Khanna and Dr. Sarah Andrews. Thanks for checking in.
Hey, Tom. I just want to say, I feel like the whole conversation is a little tone deaf to material conditions that exist. I personally grew up on food stamps, welfare, is what my mother had, I'm the first college graduate in my family. And, you know, I can't help but notice that, you know, the things that lead people to drink are not being addressed. And, you know, when you look at what's happening and what continues to happen to the working class in the United States, you got to look at what's leading people to do it and not just focusing on, you know, one month in the year when, you know, people who shop at Eddie's are foregoing their bottle of wine versus the people who are, you know, scraping to make ends meet, see no end in sight, no way out of, you know, the bottomless pit that exists for a lot. So I just wanted to throw that into the conversation. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Charles. That's a good point. And Dr. Khanna, here's the thing. If drinking, generally speaking, isn't good for you, and, you know, the evidence is pretty clear that it's not, but does it work? Does it relieve stress? Does it, you know, dull the stressors that, you know, Charles mentions, you know, that so many people have? And again, every person is different. But, you know, does alcohol work?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question. I thank you, Charles, for bringing that up. And I want you to know that the community that I have worked with for the last 36 years now, 35, is West Baltimore, where we do see a lot of people who shop at Dollar General and the neighborhood dollar store. So I understand where you are. And I've lived here. So I totally know this community. The other thing to think about is that why do we drink? One, it is peer pressure. You know, people are thinking, okay, everybody drinks in my school. Why don't I have a drink? And that is becoming somewhat replaced by experimentation with cannabis and experimenting with vapes and things. But there are still people who tend to get started with trying out a drink in school years. And getting into the young adulthood, we still see people having a drink with friends. It is a social lubricant, if you will. It brings people together. So it becomes very seductive, you know, to have a drink with friends, and it's very cool. And then you might find yourself in a place where you're by yourself and you still think you need that one drink. And that's where that slippery slope happens, you know, when you start to drink alone. And unfortunately, there is no way to tell yourself that I will have only one drink. It all becomes a question of willpower. You may have two one day and three one day. So do I recommend any sort of drinking to any of my patients? No, I don't. I don't. But I know, I understand that people do drink because of this question of peer pressure, socialization, pleasure. Maybe you like it. And like Tom alluded, maybe it makes some of the life issues that you're going through a little bit duller. Maybe it just makes you feel a little bit maybe different. And that might be reinforcing another drink and another drink. But I think as a physician, I would tell you that alcohol is not good for you. And if you have an occasional drink, it's probably okay. But daily alcohol can be a slippery slope, probably not something that I would recommend.
And Dr. Andrews, you have a background in psychiatry. Is it a matter of rewiring your brain to not need that sensory, you know, dulling, to not need the calming effects that people may crave through alcohol? What are your tips for people who are trying to, you know, go from heavy drinking to no drinking, or moderate drinking to no drinking, or a lot less drinking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question. And there's so many aspects that play into it. So it's not just a question of willpower and just to stop drinking. There's so many different factors that influence drinking habits. There are a lot of psychological factors. So people with mood disorders or PTSD are more likely to also have problematic drinking habits. And a lot of it can be due to in the short term, I might feel like the alcohol elevates the mood, but then in the long term, it definitely can worsen anxiety and depression. And a lot of people find, even if they're having a bad day, the alcohol might help them in the short term feel better. But then also when they're in a good mood, oh, you're feeling good, you want to enjoy yourself, that also can influence it. There's also biological factors. There's also genetic factors and that also influence it. And similar to what Charles described, there's environmental factors. There's the accessibility. There's even family history and those around you. If they're drinking, that might also influence the drinking habits. So there's a lot of different aspects that definitely can influence it, and really approaching, there's not one model that fits every single individual, approaching it from different aspects and really trying to address all the reasons that someone might be drinking.
And Dr. Khanna, if someone is drinking heavily or moderately for that matter, is it harmful to quit sort of cold turkey? We hear about alcohol withdrawal. And there are even, you know, there's some evidence that says alcohol withdrawal can be life-threatening. What's the best way? Do you gradually wean yourself down, or do you do it abruptly?
Yeah, so that's a very, very interesting question. And yes, certainly in my many years of being here, I have seen a ton of heavy drinkers. Heavy drinkers are not the candidates for dry January, that's for sure, because that's our topic today. When you're a heavy drinker, most patients need to first acknowledge that they are heavy drinkers. That's the first step, that you actually recognize that having a fifth of vodka every night is heavy drinking. So the first step when you're talking to a patient is to have them believe that what they're doing is truly harming their health. The way we do that is to show them their blood pressure and to show them their liver enzymes. Usually those are graphic things that you can demonstrate to a patient, and then to invite them into a some sort of cessation method, whether you use AA or you're using an actual program to step you down, that helps you do that with the help of some medications. It all depends on what your patient is willing for. And like I said, the hardest part is for them to believe that they are heavy drinkers. Once you have the patient believe that, then it's a little bit easier to offer the options. And for each patient, the options are going to be different.
We just have a little bit of time left, but I do want to go to the phones one last time to Dan, who's in Graysonville. Dan, give us a quick comment about your experience, which I guess you gave up drinking last November. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It started as a no drink November, and I decided to do a dry January as well. And I certainly noticed the positive outcomes of that. I'm sleeping better, waking up more refreshed. The cravings were certainly hard to get over at first. I can tell you that honestly, but I feel 100 times better than I did when I was drinking every night, you know, to calm my nerves, to feel, you know, feel better after a day of work. So I definitely advocate for that for anybody. Just try it.
All right, great. Well, thank you, Dan. I appreciate that perspective, and I'm grateful to Dr. Niyarika Khanna, Professor of Family and Community Medicine at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. Thank you for your time, Dr. Khanna. And Dr. Sarah Andrews, she's the medical director at Telegen, a healthcare management company. Thank you, Dr. Andrews. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Tom.
And we have
Thank you for the invite.
Certainly. And we have a list of dry January events. There are such things on our website. And that's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, it's Midday with the Mayor. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott joins me. I'll also speak with Jared DeMarinis, the administrator of the State Board of Elections, about a new system for reporting campaign finance information. And J. Wynn Russick will review the latest installment in the Baltimore August Wilson celebration at the Spotlighters Theater. Fresh Air is up next. Dexter Filkins from The New Yorker talks about his profile of Marco Rubio. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.
This is 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.